RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And this is a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. This week, we're going to be covering Episode 5 and Episode 6 from Season 1. Episode 5 is called Damaged, and it originally aired on November 7th, 2012. And Episode 6 is called Legacies from November 14th, 2012. And just in case it's been a while since you saw these, let's just give you a brief rundown of what happened in the episodes. In Damaged, this is the one where Oliver, he faces danger on the island against a group of mercenaries that he discovers there. He thought he was just alone with Yao Fei. And then while back in Starling City, he's arrested and tried for being the vigilante. Basically, Detective Lance has a thing for him there and is trying to get him put away. Legacies, the sixth episode, Oliver must go after the Royal Flush Gang, which they are not called that in the episode, but it's a family group of bank robbers, and he's also dealing with the legacy that his father left him. There's some other tie-ins to the theme of legacies there that we will get into on the show. So let's just look at the news segment really quick. There's not a lot of news right now for stuff that's going on in the Arrowverse, but there is stuff that we saw. There have been a lot of different news stories that have been out there, but I didn't feel like putting them in the episode right now. So my question is, how would you like us to handle spoilers? Josh, I know we've talked about this a little bit, like off air, you know, I think we wanted to keep from just out and out telling people what was coming up. So for listeners out there, if there's casting or character info on upcoming episodes, how would you like us to handle that? We can just talk about it here in the news segment. Like, we could let you know that, hey, you know, the Royal Flush Gang is going to be showing up in an upcoming episode, or that, you know, such and such an actor has been cast as a part, but maybe we don't know who it is. So we could put that in the news segment, or we could do it in a spoiler segment that follows the end of the show. So if you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to listen to it. But that's, you can right. Email us. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty good way to do it. I've heard that on a couple other shows.
Yeah, and most of the news stories that we hear has to do with the behind-the-scenes things, with the casting and things that might be coming up, and not so much story, so we could separate that out too. You know, you guys, you let us know.
All you have to do is email us and let us know at greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can hop on our Facebook page, Green Justice Podcast, on Facebook, and let us know what you think. So what do we have for discussion topics for the show this week, Josh?
Well, first I want to cover the first appearances for these two episodes. You know, the first one of the important characters that we see, who we don't find out a whole lot about him yet, but he's probably going to prove to be very important, is a guy named Edward Fires.
Yes, this is the British gentleman in the mercenary camp that kidnaps Oliver. And so in the previous episodes, all we've known is that there's this kind of crazy Chinese dude running around on the island shooting arrows at strangers. And but I think we felt there was something else going on. I mean, he was very protective, you know, but, you know, there wasn't anybody else that we saw. And then this episode, I don't know, I think we saw probably like a dozen dudes walking around in black outfits with vests and boots and
and you don't find hoods. Out too much about what they're doing at all by any means, but there's a
I don't think you find out anything
big.
Yeah.
There's something big, you can tell that. So, and they're obviously after the Oliver's rescuer for some reason.
Right. Well, I'm getting a big Lost vibe from this. You know, it's just that it's the island. There's this mysterious thing. You know, it wasn't mysterious how he got shipwrecked, really. You know, this boat went down. But, you know, you don't know anything about the island. It's just that big enigma. And it's kind of cool because now all of a sudden it's like, wow, okay, well, there's all sorts of people on the island, but these are not the people you go up to and say, hey, you know, I was stranded here, and can you help me get off? I mean, these guys, they see him, they throw Oliver in this tiger trap, and then they bring him in to see Edward Fires, who, like you said, he's probably going to be a big deal. He seems to be the leader. He's British, and he really wants to know if Oliver has seen this Chinese soldier, and it's an older picture of Yao Fei that he's wearing a Chinese military uniform of some type, and he's not as shaggy, I guess.
He's obviously been on the run from him for quite a while,
yeah.
Or he just grows facial hair really fast, one of the two.
And obviously, well, so the other thing we find out is that the island is in the North China Sea. That's where the boat went down. So, okay, that makes sense that this guy might have been in the army or something like that. But, like, where is the island? Like, how did he get to the island? How did all these guys get to the island? What are they doing there? Because it's a whole camp. It's not just, like, some guys driving around or anything like that.
No, and it's also the first time we find out that the island is called is named Purgatory. That's the English translation of it,
mm-hmm.
Right? So there's obviously we're going to find out a little bit at a time what's going on in this island, but you know my suspicion is that it has something to do with Oliver's father. So,
oh yeah, well that's you know I hadn't even really connected that yet, but yeah, I mean, everything seems to have to do with Oliver's father in some fashion. That's kind of the underlying impetus for a lot of the character's motivation. So well, that's really cool. We also are introduced to, well, not by name. We don't get introduced to this gentleman in actuality. He's just Edward Fire's friend who's come to pay Oliver a little visit and, you know, show him a little TLC, and that's Deathstroke.
and what does TLC stand for exactly?
Tough, loving, cutting, something
cutting.
Like that.
Cutting. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, he's got a big knife. I mean, it's a knife that's got these big serrated edges. And basically, because Oliver's not talking, and Oliver thinks he's being noble and not revealing information, but Edward can see right through him that he's lying and brings Deathstroke in. So Deathstroke, I think we mentioned a little bit about him in the last couple episodes. We saw his mask in the first episode on a pike with an arrow stuck through the eye hole, which you were saying was something that had happened in one of the comic books at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's a Teen Titan villain for the most part, but he has shown up in a number of other DC titles. He has had his own title for a while. He's known as Deathstroke the Terminator. They dropped the Terminator bit from him for a while there because they didn't want to get confused with the Arnold Schwarzenegger franchise. So he's this big, muscular dude, and he wears it's basically a balaclava mask, but it's black on one half and orange-ish on the other half, with holes for his eyes, but no hole for the mouth or anything like that. It's very tight fitting, and he is a big buff dude, and he's got, like I said, he's got this big knife, and he just proceeds to torture Oliver, and that's where a number of the scars, or maybe all the scars that we see on Oliver, comes from. Other than that, we don't know anything else about this dude. Again,
no, and you know, I want to. I mean, they're obviously going to tell us a little bit more, but you know, it's not looking too promising for his future, at least not for his mask, if it ends up on the spike on the island at some point. But I like how they have used a lot of the characters and even a few of the villains and things so far in the show and made them more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they kind of find a good way to explain why he's wearing this mask here on this island. It seemed a little bit out of place, and you know they're going for not the comic booky superhero kind of cheesy thing, but him wearing the mask in this camp with the people that he's obviously working for seemed just a little bit off to me. But maybe they'll find a way to kind of fit that in.
Right. Well, it kind of it demonstrates a different level of his position in this group of mercenaries. Edward Fires doesn't wear a mask, but he wears the same kind of black uniform as everybody else. Deathstroke has this very
unique mask and has a slightly different mercenary style uniform than everybody else. The other half dozen people that we see walking around in the camp and the people that like grabbed Oliver to start with, they were just wearing mercenary uniforms and just regular like black fabric balaclavas. So, you know, maybe Fires is in charge. He's like the general. And then Deathstroke is, you know, some sort of, like lieutenant or something like that. His right hand man, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he controls the other mercenaries for whatever they're doing. You know, I mean, it seems like a military operation. That's the only reason I use the term mercenaries. Again, there was really nothing given away. You know, if you don't know who this is, you would just say, oh, there's a dude in a mask. We only know he's Deathstroke just from the
mask is really what tells us that he's Deathstroke, honestly. I mean,
right.
I don't have a problem with it, and I'm certainly willing to wait to find out. But that just kind of stood out for me in the series, because they've kind of stayed away from things that were quite that obvious and comic booky. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not as, you know, I mean, it looks like it's a realistic kind of mask, not just like a fabric thing the guy pulled over his head. It looks like there's some kind of form underneath it, like a, you know, like a hard mask or something like that. So I think it's, like you said, it's done in a real-world style, much the way Oliver's costume is. They do the Green Arrow costume in a way that if you were really making that costume, you would. It's not, you know, tights and... like a Robin Hood outfit with the weird gloves and stuff like that he's wearing. It's very, you know, practical, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
Yep, and modern.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So I think those were the only first appearances for the first episode, Damaged. What about Legacies? We had some appearances there.
We had one of my favorite cheesy group of supervillains from the comic book, the Royal Flush Gang.
Yes.
And like you said, they don't call them the Royal Flush Gang in the episode, but they don't really make anything but one reference to them being the Royal Flush Gang, apart from the family name. But they all wear masks, which they looked.
They're hockey masks.
Yeah. They were solid hockey masks, cover their whole face, but each one of them has a different face of a playing card on it. Mm-hmm. So, and the Royal Flush Gang in the comic books was much more. I'm not sure how to describe
it. Spandexy,
like very spandexy, especially on the women family members. So,
yes.
But they were dressed like the actual card faces from playing cards. So this one, it obviously, you know, it was a definite homage to those characters. But this was done in a much more realistic style, like the show has kind of been shooting for. I thought it worked really well. I actually liked the inclusion of these and the way they fit them in. So
I was when I had heard that the Royal Flush Gang was going to appear, I'm like, really? How are they going to do this? I hope they do the one where Ace is a is an android, and I'm like, they're not going to do it that way. Because so just a couple quick differences in the comic books. It is a 5-piece Royal Flush, because that would be a full Royal Flush. It's 10, Jack, Queen, King, and Ace. And King and Jack are two men, 10 and Queen are women, and then Ace is sometimes a man, depending on which version of the gang is happening, or in other cases, he's an android, which I love that. I just think that was really cool, because you don't know he's an android in the comic for a while. And they've also had different inclusions of the Royal Flush Gangs. There was a spade version, there was a club version, and they had kind of an all-inclusive you know, all hands version, I guess. So, like you said, realistically done. I don't think the Queen character ever wears a mask in this. I think it's just Ace, Jack, and King are the only ones, because those are the guys, and they're kind of in. They're the ones that are doing the robberies and stuff, so they're the ones wearing the mask. Queen's usually like the getaway driver, I guess. So, I thought this was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was. I really liked the inclusion of them, and I thought it was a very dramatic, kind of tragic, actually, you know, story that this family was having. So
yeah, so what you mentioned that there was really only one instance that kind of referred to them as the Royal Flush Gang. Is that just the the cards on their masks? Is that
the cards on their masks? I think was the real thing that if you didn't know much history about the comic characters, they did have the same name as the Royal Flesh Gang family in the comics.
Did. Oh, the Restons.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But like you said, they never mentioned it. So the masks were my only indication that that's who it was. But I knew right away, as soon as I saw those masks, that that's who it was. So
cool. And one other kind of first appearance is Laurel's legal clinic. We have seen it before, but we finally get to find out what CNRI stands for. As we mentioned a couple episodes ago, that's kind of an homage to Canary, which Laurel will potentially become the Black Canary, at least in the comic books, Laurel Lance or Dinah Lance, depending on which version you talk about, is the Black Canary. So we know she's worked for this legal clinic, and that is called the City Necessary Resources Initiative. And they actually have a little bit of problem in the second episode we're going to talk about tonight. So we just see that the name on the back of the wall, it's not even, I don't think it's mentioned by any of the characters at this point as well. Oh, and also,
no, I don't think so.
We do actually get a mention of Yao Fei's name finally in Legacies. Oliver mentions his name at one point. So I think that's the first time we've had his name revealed to us. But again, I could be mistaken. I could have missed it or something like that. Oh, and one other thing I did want to mention about the Royal Flesh Gang. If anybody's interested in seeing another version of them, they had just appeared last year in February of 2012 on the direct-to-DVD movie Justice League Doom. I don't know if you had a chance to check that out, but...
No, I haven't seen that.
It's based on a... it's loosely based on a Justice League storyline from the early 2000s or maybe the late 90s called Babel, which Batman keeps records in his computer about how he would take down all the members of the Justice League in case they were ever to go bad or rogue. And someone breaks into his computer and steals those and then proceeds to do exactly what he recommends. So basically he has doomed the entire Justice League. Well, the opening little bit, and kind of like the way a James Bond movie opens, you've got the opening action sequence that's not necessarily related to the rest of the show. It's the Royal Flesh Gang riding around on flying playing cards, giant flying playing cards.
Well, and, of course. How else would you travel? Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're dressed up like a king from a playing card deck, I mean, you want to go in style, right?
So oh, yeah.
They're robbing some large bank and, racing around. And so the Justice League is trying to bring them down, and of course, they don't all team up and go after the different characters. They all have to break apart and fight one-on-one. The person that has the least skills to go against that particular villain, so they get defeated and then they swap, so they can bring him down. So if you want to see another version of the Royal Flesh Gang, that's probably closer to what you would get in the comic books, Justice League Doom, which is available on DVD and Blu-ray, and probably you can download it or stream it on Netflix now. All right, so I want to get talking a little bit about some of the things that was going on in Damaged here. The theme for this episode, which I think was repeated by Yao Fei probably about 15 times, was breathe. This was him telling Oliver on the island, in order to survive, which in the previous episode was him just reminding Oliver that he needs to survive. Now he's reminding Oliver he needs to breathe. So Oliver, goes on to fire an arrow because he has to breathe to do that. And there's the whole part with the lie detector where he breathes through the questions that they're bringing up. But the overall thing that I think we find out on this, Josh, is that Oliver, and I think you mentioned this on the last episode, Oliver actually wanted to be caught. Like, he allowed himself to be caught. He knew that the video camera was there taping him and that Detective Lance was going to bring him in. So my question is that there was talk about people being selfish and things like that in the episode, but was Oliver being selfish, wanting to be caught to prove his innocence? He was putting a lot of people in harm's way with that action? And, you know, was it only for himself, or do you think there was a greater good for it?
I think it was more, I think that's, you know, kind of how it came across, especially to Diggle. At least, you know, when Diggle kind of found out what he was doing. But I honestly think it was more to kind of cover his tracks. It was almost more of establishing more of a secret identity because, and I think he mentioned this, I don't remember if it was this episode or last episode, but he mentioned it's something that, you know, he appears back in Starling City after 5 years, and then the vigilante appears at the same time. And, you know, people, there's some people that are suspecting he's doing something weird. And I think, you know, even the detective said something about him being at the same place where this vigilante had appeared, you know, recently. And
yeah,
so
with the Adam Hunt robbery, because he kept asking Oliver if he had stolen the $30 or $40 million from Adam Hunt.
Right. And so I think to me it was almost like more establishing an alibi so he could have, you know, maintain more of a secret identity. So I don't think it was so much being selfish. It almost was helping to protect some of the people that he loved. If people started making this connection, it would put them more in danger. So
right. Well,
that's how I saw it.
Yeah, and that was part of the story that Oliver used as well. But he was going further with it because he had already made some other assumptions, let's say, or decisions when he was going to be caught. So he's obviously thinking multiple steps ahead here. He knew what was going on, that he was going to be videotaped, and that the cops were then probably going to come and capture him. And he also knew that there was a arms deal going down at the same time. So he also knew that he was then going to ask Dig to put on the hood and go and, you know, show his face, quote unquote, as the vigilante in another part of town while Oliver was either sitting in jail or, you know, he had the little
being watched by the cops.
He had the collar on his foot, so they knew he couldn't get out of the house and all that stuff. Tracked, you know, the little tracker.
Yeah.
So, and that's where Diggle really calls him out. You know, he says that, you know, you were lying to me about, you know, your motives and your intentions and stuff like that, and you can't do that. So that's why, you know, that's why I was thinking that he was being selfish, because Oliver was just thinking about a way, like you said, to clear his own name and stuff like that, and maybe to protect the people, which I think, you know, his family and stuff like that, which comes secondary, but he didn't think about all the other people or events that he might set in motion, I think, with this. And he probably didn't think it through as far as he needed to.
I don't know if it's him being selfish so much as thinking that he's completely in control. You know, I mean, he's almost a little arrogant in thinking that he has the power to do what he wants to do, and he almost assumes that he can get away with it and have, you know, Diggle just do this and he's not going to have a problem with it, and that everybody will be fine. He doesn't like, and like you said, you know, he doesn't see how it's going to affect everybody and how it's going to affect his family and when he's arrested and how it's going to affect, you know, Laurel. And I mean, so I think you're right. You know, I mean, he's not looking at that part of it. But I don't know if it's him being selfish so much, just him, thinking he's got a little more power than he actually has.
Okay. Well,
and Diggle kind of calls him out on that too. You know, in the next episode, he does that as well. He brings him down. You know, he's honest with him.
He's very plain or he doesn't beat around the bush, I guess, is what it comes down to. With the damaged episode though, there was also the notion of lying to, you know, Diggle. Diggle actually points out that, you know, you weren't completely honest with me about putting me in harm's way when, you know, you wanted me to go in as the vigilante, because Oliver thought, well, I just thought, you know, if you would just show up as the vigilante. But then, you know, there was extraneous circumstances, so Diggle actually had to go in and fight. So Which I thought was really cool. You know, just seeing, you know, Dingle has definitely some moves. He didn't do anything, any archery or anything like that, but he came in and did some hand-to-hand combat and took these, what, three or four gun dealers down,
yeah.
You know, without much incident at all, which is good. I mean, you know, you're busting up a gun ring and, you know, it's probably a good chance that you would get shot. But so... The line that I think gets thrown out at the end by Diggle is, you know, what happens when you lie to the ones that you love the most? And that's what Oliver's doing here. I mean, he's not telling his mom anything. He's not telling his sister anything. He's not telling Laurel anything as he starts to let her in a little bit because in previous episodes, you know, he's feeling the connection of being Arrow, talking to Laurel and that relaxes him a little bit. But in this one, again, he's arrested. He starts pushing everybody back away. And then he's lying to Diggle, who is the one person that knows his secret. And, you know, is probably right now as close as anyone can get to him. You know, what is that doing for the whole, you know, relationship building that Oliver's trying to do now coming back from the island?
Well, I think that's going to get in the way. I mean, it's going to be an important story element as we go through the series. At least the first season, it would have to be because he has to kind of establish this double life, and in order to do that, you have to lie to the people you love. You know, and it's kind of a traditional superhero kind of theme.
Yeah.
You know, they're always lying to their girlfriends or their family to keep them safe, to protect them. And I think it's something he's going to struggle with, though, because I mean, I think he's dying to tell Laurel.
Yeah.
And even, you know, to a point, I think his sister, he wants her to know. And, it's hard. It's kind of a good... It's kind of a good plot point that weaves in and out of each episode. So
it comes close to being cliche, and I think they have to be careful about that.
Yeah.
But you pointing out he does want to tell his sister. In this episode, she, you know, everybody's questioning, or I guess everybody's assuring him, oh, there's no way you can be this vigilante. His mom knows for sure, right? His sister says, but, you know, this is so weird. You gave me that arrowhead in the first episode. And he's
yeah,
like,
he's really not a very good liar.
Oh, my gosh. So he's like, I picked that up at the Shanghai airport, you know? And and Laurel's like, well, I know you're not the vigilante because, you know, he fights for people and is selfless. And, you know, you're the most selfish person I know, you know, which you can see it just pains him to do that. But I guess the bigger question is here, you know, in talking about lying to the ones you love the most, is Oliver lying to himself? Is there something that he's denying in himself about who he is that he has to conquer and break through? Because until he accepts the fact that, you know, he is these two people. He has to live the lie of being this playboy while, you know, deep down knowing that everything that he's doing is, you know, to right his father's wrongs and, you know, protect the city and everything like that. You know, at some point there, that's got to screw him up pretty good.
Oh, big time. I mean, and he's lying about so many things to himself, about, you know, protecting his family. You know, I mean, he definitely wants to do that, but I think he always falls back on, and you see it several times in both these episodes, he always falls back on the excuse that he's righting his father's wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of, he's kind of got blinders on, you know, that's the only thing he's seeing.
Right.
And he's lying to himself in that aspect because it's going to become, important to do other things than just that. And also, you know, he is kind of lying to himself about justifying, killing these people. And we've seen that kind of come up too. You can tell he has some second thoughts or, you know, has to think twice about whether he's going to go through with it or comes back later even and do it, does it.
Right. Well, I mean, a big portion of this episode is him beating a lie detector. Kind of, but not really. You know, it's like he offers to take a lie detector because that's the only way he's going to be able to prove to Detective Lance that he is not the vigilante. And you know, so the big question comes out, you know, have you killed anyone? And, you know, you see, okay, this is it. He's going to lie. Like, he's breathing like Yao Fei taught him, and he's going to do some kind of, you know, Buddhist thing and just, boom, go right through it. And then he says, yes, I've killed somebody, and, you know, admits basically to killing Sarah Lance, who is Laurel's sister, when, you know, they went down on the boat together. But also, he lies about having ever been to Iron Heights prison, because that was where the vigilante was last seen. And Laurel calls him out on it. She says, don't you remember we went there at one point in eighth grade? And so, you know, now she knows that something is not right, that he is lying about that. And so now she questions, what else are you lying about? And so, again, the trust is broken. You know, he was working his way slowly back into her good graces, and then, boom, took it all away with just that little bit, because obviously he didn't remember about that. He was so focused, like you say, on his mission, right? The righting of his father's wrongs, and that he had to get himself dismissed, the suspicion dismissed from him, that he glossed over something that he should have remembered and that should have, you know, been important, because I'm assuming, you know, at the time they were, you know, maybe they were dating or something like that. That was the time before the island, when Laurel and Oliver were a couple at some point. So,
yeah. And real quick, you know, you mentioned cliche. I hope one thing they don't do. Laurel is extremely intelligent. I mean, you can tell that they definitely portray her as somebody that's got it all together. And I hope, you know, they don't drag out too long the fact that she doesn't know, because based on what we've seen so far, if she's really as smart as they're showing her, she's going to figure this out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And if she doesn't, I think that kind of shows that kind of cliche dumb girlfriend, because, you know, Clark's wearing glasses kind of idea, you know?
Right. So, well, yeah, but that might be that, you know, that could be a good season finale sort of piece.
Yeah.
Cause that would be good. Yeah. Cause you know, they'd be, what, 18 so or so episodes into it or something like that, and have her figure it out. So you're right, though. She is very smart. She understands what's going on. She can see through a lot of the BS that Oliver pulls, and, you know, and realizes that he's kind of putting on a facade to some extent. She sees through a lot of stuff that Tommy does, you know, so... that's a good point. Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting thing to see how long it takes for that to show up. You had mentioned Oliver lying about dealing with the killing and everything like that, and the person that he's hunting in this episode is Leo Mueller, who's another name from the list. And at the very end of the episode, the vigilante draws his bow on Mueller, and then we cut to black. I don't believe there's even like a sound effect with it. So my question,
I thought I remembered a sound effect, but I could be wrong.
Oh, okay.
But they definitely cut it. I mean, they didn't show anything for sure. So
right. So my question is, did he really kill Mueller, or did he do one of those things where he fire, you know, he like shoots right next to him, you know, to scare him into, you know, giving up his bad ways and everything like that.
Right. Or even just captured him in some way, you know, so
right,
the police could get him, or maybe, hey, maybe that's when he used the boxing glove arrow. It you never know. They just knocked him out. So they didn't show that, though. So
we haven't seen that yet. Yeah.
So, we haven't seen that.
But it's I think it's an interesting question, because, you know, again, he seems quick to be able to make that decision to take somebody's life. And maybe that's where the character growth is going to come in here, is that he's going to learn that he needs to, find some other way to do it. Cause he seems to give people, at least in some of these early episodes, he gives people a second chance, or the ability to have a second chance. And still, he doesn't necessarily kill him. I think he's only really killed one of the bad guys before, and then like Deadshot killed another one. And I mean, they're not really calling them bad guys. We really don't even see their crimes. We just know that they're on the list, so that automatically makes you bad, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think he killed him, or where do you see this going?
I think he did. Just in the the intensity that he had in this episode, this particular episode, I think he did kill Mueller at the end. You know, there's no continuation of that storyline in the episode six, but mm-hmm.
Well, and he definitely went there with a passion to get the revenge.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell in his body language. But you know, I mean, the fact that they didn't actually show it either means they're just kind of restraining themselves on showing the violence, or mm-hmm. that there's something a little bit more there. So we'll see.
Well, speaking of the list, we see the well-dressed man again. This is how he's referred to in the credits right now. So I think I might have been calling him the mystery man before, but we'll go with well-dressed.
That's what they call
him. Yeah.
WDM.
Oh, there you go. WDM. Yeah, that's cool. Well, he continues to exert his power as Walter is investigating this boat, the wreck of the Queen's Gambit that he found in the previous episode. He asks his head of security to go move it to a secure location, and the next day we find out that his head of security has been killed in a car accident. And so Moira goes to talk to the well-dressed man and says, oh, I guess, no, then the second thing that happened was Oliver is, accused of being the vigilante. He is confined to his home by means of an ankle bracelet, and he's up in his room when some guy dressed as a waiter knocks on his door, screws a silencer in, and comes in to attack Oliver. And if it weren't for Oliver's training, he would have easily been a well-ventilated playboy. So Oliver manages to...
That would be a WVP?
Yes. Very good. Oh, this is working out very nice. Oliver manages to take this guy down, and just as the killer is about to get an upper hand, he gets shot by Detective Lance, who comes in conveniently very quickly because, quote, when the guy started fighting you, the ankle bracelet broke and we lost signal, so I raced into... Stop you or whatever. I don't know.
Should have broken it earlier. So
yeah, exactly. So then Moira goes back to the well-dressed man, to WDM, and says, you know, she knows that he was the one behind the killing of the head of security and that he had made an attempt on Oliver's life. And he's like, well, you know, hey, I thought he was the vigilante. Everybody thought he was the vigilante. You can't blame me. And she threatens. Yeah. Oops. She threatens him, you know, you come anywhere near my family and you know, you're going to regret it. And, you know, I don't know. That seems like a really hollow threat. I mean, if he is the man behind why there's this list potentially, and was working with, Ollie's dad and, you know, the mom, Moira seems to have some sort of, relationship with him, but it's not a peer relationship. She is subservient to him in some fashion.
Well, that's how it has seemed. But when she comes at him at the end there, she seems to have a little influence. I'm not sure somebody with that kind of power, you would just go up and threaten idly like that. So,
well,
I don't
I
know.
Think she, I was going to say she might feel safe. I mean, you know, it's like, well, I don't know. You know, I mean, all these people I think that are being offed or targeted in different ways are rich, but you know, she's a pretty important businesswoman in the town. Mm-hmm. And I think she might feel that protects her a little bit. It's like, well, you're not just going to kill me because especially not right there, you know, right in his office. Cause that would probably, I mean, he may be able to cover that up too, but you know, maybe she feels that she's got immunity of some kind, but I don't know. It feels like one of those threats, like you know, you just mess with the wrong guy and, you know, that's, you know, he's going to come back and do something to her. That's, you know, to show that he is the one in control.
He's the one in power. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we don't get, there's not a lot of, other, storyline with the well-dressed man or anything like that in the second episode. Episode number six, 106 here, Legacies. First off, I'm sorry. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about with the damaged episode? Anything else that you saw that was interesting?
No, I thought, you know, the way it ended is they're using that same idea of tying everything together with these little mysteries, with the mysteries of you know, what his mom is involved in, who the well-dressed man is, how it's connected to the boat, and possibly the things going on the island. And so I like how they're tying all these together with that, because they're also doing kind of that villain of the week kind of idea, almost, it feels like right now. So I'm glad that they have something else to tie them together, because I think it can sometimes get a little tedious if you just keep doing that villain of the week thing. So
there's definitely the episodic elements, and then the series, the thread that runs through the series, and that's kind of I think it's a twofold one. Like you mentioned, it's what was happening on the island and how did Oliver become the man he is today in Starling City, with all these power, or with all this knowledge of archery and everything like that. And then
it's the same kind of template that they used for Smallville, you know, to kind of show how Clark was developing his powers, and each week there was, you know, something new going on that would kind of help him with that. So which a lot of people liked. I really liked that when in Smallville too. So
yeah, in the early episodes it was great, and then by the time it got to the 10th season, you know, it's like, come on already. It's like he's everything but Superman at that point.
Yeah.
It got a little for me, it went on maybe two or three seasons too long. I didn't watch it religiously like I'm doing with Arrow. Because it wasn't quite dealing with Superman, and you know, if it was dealing full on with the superhero, I think I would have enjoyed a little bit more. But it was pretty good. So let's hope Arrow, you know, doesn't make the same mistakes and go on too long when it should be done.
Yeah. You know, so. Well, I think that one of the advantages of Arrow is that it's not quite as well known and established, and you know, there's not a lot of, you know, powers and things that he's going to develop. So you can kind of just, if you can keep up with these interesting storylines where he's taking care of the city, like Batman would, you know, then I think they can do it.
Okay. Well, so in Legacies, this is the one with the Royal Flush Gang that we had mentioned earlier. I got to say, this has got some of the best banter between Dig and Oliver in it, this episode.
Oh, yes.
They, they've been working together now for an episode, and it opens with a training montage, which is just fabulous. We go from seeing Oliver from the flashbacks that we've seen him in, where he is being trained on how to shoot an arrow, or you know, the fact that he really can't even defend himself, to this training montage of he and Dig fighting with some kind of staves, two hand staves in each hand, and Oliver being the mentor. And Dig can take care of himself, except Oliver has just that extra little move that he puts in at the end of each of the pieces that hurts Dig in some fashion, or smacks him in the face with a stick. Ow.
It's like that little martial arts thing where, you know, the master finally takes him down with his pinky or something like that. You know, he has he makes it look so easy.
It's like he's toying with him, and then they look like they're fighting, but you realize then that Oliver's really toying with him, and then at any point he could just, you know, take him out. So but while they're doing these training things, they're also discussing what's going on with the Royal Flush Gang and the banks that they're robbing and everything like that. And, you know, Oliver's like, well, they're not on the list. And Dig's like, come on, man. You know, this is obvious. This is a problem in the city. And Oliver's pointing out it's a symptom, but it's not the problem. The list. The list is the problem. It's always back to the list. Oliver claims that he's not a hero. And you know, and Dig says that, well, you've got a really narrow definition of what being a hero is. So I'm going to ask you, Josh, why do you think Oliver claims that he is not a hero? What about him looking in the mirror says, you know, these are not heroic things that I'm doing?
You know, I think there's I think there's a lot of little things, but I think the main thing is he kind of feels responsible for what his father's done. Just being a member of the family, I think he kind of feels like you know, he was just spent all those years playing and screwing around and didn't even see what was going on, and how many people it actually hurt. And I think there's some guilt there, you know, and also I think, you know, we don't know what happened to him on the island to kind of turn him into this serious kind of person that he is. I mean, we know some things that have happened, but, you know, I think he's struggling with, you know, the things we've been talking about where, how is he going to take these people down? Is he going to kill them? Is he, you know, who have they affected and what have they done? And I think it's just all those little things. I think he's confused as to who he truly is. So I just don't think he sees himself as a hero.
It, well, it may go back to him seeing it as, like, since you mentioned, it's like, you know, he feels the guilt for what his father's done. He's kind of, you know, it's the son revisiting the sins of the father. It's a very time-worn tale that we've heard. But maybe he feels the responsibility, that familial responsibility, is like, all right, so someone in my family screwed this up. It's my job to put, you know, put these things right, which is, I think, one of the phrases he uses. So in that case, it's not him being heroic at all. It's him being responsible, or like, and you know, I won't even go so far as to say it's a responsible citizen, because he is so much beyond what a citizen of the city is. Dig is a citizen in the political term of citizen, you know, like the Romans would have used it, someone who provides service for the city that they live in, not just a denizen, but right, you know, citizens were actually, you know, they provided service, you know, in different ways to the place they lived. Oliver is doing that, but he's doing it such a extreme level that Dig sees it as the elevation to hero status, you know, standing up in times and to people that nobody else would. That's what I think defines a hero in this place. And like you said, Oliver just doesn't see that.
Yeah. Well, and I want to bring up something that I was thinking about as I was watching that is it's a contradiction to Batman, where, you know, Batman became a hero because of the tragedy of his parents being killed, you know, by the criminals in the city. Mm-hmm. And
as a direct, you know, result of that action.
Yes. And whereas I think, you know, Oliver in this incarnation of it, he's not doing it because of a tragedy that happened, but because of like a realization of something that his family has done. You know, I mean, he's discovering that his family, where at least his dad, he really doesn't know anything about his mom at this point,
right?
But she's and that's going to be an interesting revelation when he finds that out. But you know, he's finding out that his dad is the bad guy. His dad is one of the criminals that is turning the city into something that he's doesn't want to accept,
right?
And so it's a completely different idea from becoming a hero the way Batman became a hero, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting, since Arrow really was, you know, born from the idea of Batman.
Right. Well, and Oliver's dad made the same realization that Oliver's making. It's just he made it too late. He made it when he was on death's doorstep. And so he asked his son in that very first episode to, you know, do this for him to survive so that he could set things right. And that's what we get more of that in this episode. It is called Legacies, and I think it deals with several different legacies, mostly sons betraying their fathers, fathers doing the wrong things, or maybe doing the right things but for the wrong reasons, or the wrong things for the right reasons. There's a flashback on the island where Oliver has some sort of fever dream where his father comes back and talks to him, and
yeah, talk about Lost.
Oh my gosh. You know, Lost dealt with father issues all the time. I don't recall shows in the 20th century never dealt so much with father issues. It was always other things, I think. But so Oliver, you know, takes a gun from his dad and goes to shoot himself in the head because he just can't handle this. He doesn't have any food. He's trapped in the cave because Yao Fei in the previous episode caused a landslide to trap him in there. And when the chamber clicks and the bullet doesn't go off, you know, the ghost of the dad says, you know, you've betrayed me because you are willing to kill yourself instead of fulfilling the promise that you made to me on my deathbed before I blew my brains out all over you. So Oliver's dad has made these bad decisions, and we find out that the father, Derek Reston, from the Royal Flush Gang, also had he has made bad decisions as well that have put his family in the position that they need to go around rob banks. But it was also Oliver's dad's fault that the Reston family is in the predicament it is, because Robert fired him and shut down one of their plants and, like, discontinued the union from being able to get any kind of you know, money after the fact, and all that kind of stuff. So they felt forced to going into this, and Oliver doesn't realize that until later that his dad had done that. But you know,
I think that's when he met up with Preston, like in a
bar,
a cafe or some bar,
yeah.
And he kind of told him the story of what had happened. Is that when he found out? Is that right?
Right, yeah. So because he wanted to go give him a second chance, but this is every time Oliver goes to give somebody, quote, a second chance, he does it as Arrow, right? He goes to them to basically scare them straight. In this case, he goes in as Oliver Queen, Robert Queen's son, to say, hey, I know what happened. I know my father, you know, closed the plant you were working at, and if there's anything I can do as the head, you know, the current head of Queen Consolidated, you know, here's my business card. We can find you a job. And Reston doesn't take it. He decides to pull, you know, that one last heist, which, again, it's, you know, the wrong decision at the wrong time in this case. And he kind of, you know, he pays for it with his life at the end of the episode. So, you know, there's this, I don't think we see what happens to his kids. It's, I think the two boys escape, but the dad dies, if I recall. Does that ring true to you?
I think you're right. I was so into whether the dad was going to die or not that I don't recall. But I think you're right. I think they did escape.
But they just don't really show what happens after that.
They did. He did have the security guard call an ambulance, and I'm assuming that the police were on their way too. And so they may not have gotten out of the building, but they didn't really go into that too much.
Right. Because it was just at the end. They were just wrapping it up there. So, yeah, definitely the legacy of the father's legacy over the son is a large theme in this particular episode, and more so Robert Queen's legacy over not only his son, but the Reston family and you know, those sons there. And even they kind of threw this character in, Carter Bowen, who is another rich friend of theirs. He's a famous neurosurgeon, and he's Moira was always comparing Oliver to him at some point, you know, oh, did you hear that he did this? You know, everything he did was always better than what Oliver did. So, in the ruse that Oliver's keeping up, Carter Bowen is still, you know, the better person, right? He's famous neurosurgeon. He's not embarrassing his family. He's gotten on and done stuff with his life. Whereas in reality, Ollie's the one that's, you know, doing the greater good, right? He's really stamping out the cancer in the city, and not, you know, not just being a rich, famous doctor and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I want to throw something out to you about his dad's legacy here, just to see what you think. You know, you mentioned that his dad came to the realization that what he was doing was wrong when he was at death's door, when it was too late. And, you know, obviously he, you know, didn't live to take care of that. But what if it was before that he knew that? What if that's why he was killed? That's why they sunk the boat or whatever happened to the boat. And, you know, the reason that Oliver was with him is maybe he was going to, get him involved in some of that. And he was going to be a part of making those wrongs right. You know, I as especially when I watched the pilot, I wondered why they were there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, out in the middle of nowhere, seemingly, I guess, in the China Sea, I guess.
Yeah.
In this boat, and it was just, you know, his dad and Oliver and then another guy. And then, you know, of course, the Laurel sister. But yeah. So, you know, I'm wondering if that might come into play, too, because he had the list with him. He didn't explain anything to him, which, you know, would have made things a lot easier. hey, you know, I'm going to kill myself, but let me tell you real quick what I want you to do. You know, just here's a list. If you want to read it, you're going to need a fire. And
yeah, it's all in invisible ink.
All invisible ink.
Which, don't rip the pages out and burn them.
Yeah, you know, coincidence, I just did my taxes in that same way. You know?
Oh, good.
Lemon juice, that's good, right?
Yeah.
They check that?
Yeah, they know how to check for that.
Oh, good. But, you know, I hope that's kind of part of the mystery, too. It's one of the things that I've been thinking about is why they were there in the first place. Because, I think it's connected somehow to everything else. So
that's a totally logical assumption there. We hadn't really discussed why were they ever out on the boat in the first place, and why were they over near this island in the China Sea and why did he have the list on him, but it was an invisible ink and stuff like that. Well, I mean, we didn't know it was invisible ink until this episode, but that's a good point. I think that, you know, what we may end up finding out is that Robert had made the decision to move away from the well-dressed man and his group, and was going to, you know, potentially ask Oliver to help him. Though, I don't know, at the pre-island Oliver, he was terribly irresponsible. So, I kind of wonder how effective that might have been. But there definitely is some plausibility that to that statement. I think that's mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing, and that's what I hope we'll continue doing on the show is, you know, looking at some of these bigger picture items and you know, trying to figure it out before the show does, because it seems like it's they just keep presenting us with different mysteries. They're giving stuff to us slowly here. I mean, we're only six episodes in here for the first season, so, you know, you gotta give them a chance to kind of get their feet wet. But it sounds like they're,
oh yeah,
or it feels like they're getting more comfortable with everything that's going on with the show.
Yeah, well, I don't want them to give me all the answers. Maybe ever, but
yeah,
for sure not right away. So
sure. Well, another section that we like to do on the show is just to do just talk about some of the references to the comic books in here, in case people aren't reading the comics, or if you may have missed stuff. A couple cool things that I spotted in the Damaged episode. There was a costume party that was going on. It was like a prison themed party, and Laurel mentions to Oliver about the time she was wearing fishnets from a costume that they were from a costume party they were going to, which is a nice little nod to the Black Canary costume. That is a famous costume that's got black fishnets on it. So that
and she called them those horrible fishnets, which is not giving me much hope that she'll be in those at some point. So. I guess we'll see.
We'll see. from the Legacies episode, there were a couple references to a couple other DC city names. Keystone City, which is famous for being the home of the Flash.
Flash, my favorite superhero.
Oh, you really? You love the Flash?
Oh, I love the Flash.
Maybe we should do a podcast about the Flash, that old TV show that they did in the 80s.
I love that show. There was only like four of them.
Yeah. I think there might have been eight episodes total. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And then Coast City, which is the home of Green Lantern, or the city that he protects. So that's cool for them. They're continuing to do those kind of shout outs. Also, we get to see, I think this is really like the first trick arrow that we've seen. Ollie has a number of arrows that have technology things in it. Like there was the recording arrow that he used that had the little MP3 player that we were talking about. So I think there might have been a smoke arrow that he had, there was the climbing arrow, the one that he shot into the side of the building, I guess, to climb up with it. Oh, and the arrow that transfers $30 million right behind the guy's head. That, you know, like the guy didn't understand where was his money going, and there's an arrow sticking out of the wall right behind him.
I'm still waiting on that package to come from Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, let us know when that shows up. But this trick,
oh,
Arrow,
I will. We'll have a nice shiny podcast when that shows up.
Okay,
I'll put some money into it.
But this trick arrow was like a steel cable arrow that he shot at a bag of money that kind of bound it down to the ground. So it when it hit when the arrow hit it, it kind of and all these little steel cables shot out and pinned themselves into the ground. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. I was wondering, you know, why he didn't use that on one of the gang members.
Yeah.
But obviously he was, you know, keeping him from taking it with him. So.
Right. Yeah. He was trying to just stop him from stealing this one of the bags of money. I think they still got away with like a bag or two bags or something like that. But, and then this is not really a reference, but it is kind of a, what I'm calling like a freeze frame moment. And, the creators of the show have to understand that, you know, we live in a digital age now where when you're watching this show, you can just stop on anything. It's not like with the VCR where, you know, oh, I can't really read what it says. If there is something on screen and you pause, you can see what you're looking at. So this is kind of just a gripe about the bad continuity of the list or the book. There have been five of the six episodes now that have had appearances of pages from the book showing a list of names. Okay, the first two times we see the list of names was for episode one and episode two. Now, what happened was they showed us basically the same list of names, except that there was one of the names disappeared the second time we saw it and was replaced with the bad guy of the week. So it was just, you know, it was not the same list of names as it was in the first episode, which is fine because, you know, they shot the pilot. They didn't know if they were ever going to do it again. And then when the writer for episode two came up with the bad guy's name, they were like, oh, we've already got this page. We'll just change someone's name to be the new bad guy's name. And so you can see Adam Hunt gets crossed off from the previous episode, and then they cross off the new guy. All right, well, that's cool. I can live with that. And then on the last episode of the podcast, we talked about how the page that we saw from the Deadpool episode, also the names were all over Deadpool's body, right? So obviously Deadpool's working the list as well. And then in episode four and then in episode six, we got to see a page from the list, and the same kind of thing happened. There was one name on it, the bad guy's name of the week from episode four. And then when we saw that page again in the flashback here of episode six, where Oliver was using the fire to make the name show up, Jason Brodeur's name was not where it was supposed to be. It was some other guy's name that was there. So I'm hoping that they'll get to a point where they figure out all the names they want to use for that season, and then they just write the pages to have those names. So when we see the page again, it's got someone crossed off, and oh, here's the next name, and yep, and that's the name we see three episodes down the line or something.
That kind of stuff always surprises me because, I mean, how many pages did they make for the show when they did that? I mean, did they just lose one and have to remake it? Or, I mean, do they have multiple? I know for a lot of things they have multiple props, but for something like that, it seems like it would be the same one each time. So,
yeah,
that was, you know, kind of surprising. But
well, and it's, you know, like I said, there are a lot of names on the page, but it's like, oh, let's see. So, like, let me see what the name was that they replaced. So, like, Jason Brodeur's name was replaced with someone that says Brandon Wicker. So, like, well, why couldn't you have just called the guy Brandon Wicker, and then you wouldn't have had to replace the page? Or, I don't know. So, we'll see. You know, that's a relatively minor gripe. I don't think anyone watching the show would pick up on that, since the pages are shown relatively quickly and the names are kind of handwritten or in a handwriting style. So, like, even for me, it takes a little while to decipher. What does that say?
Yeah,
that's a weird letter.
I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody would pick up on it, although we did just tell everybody. Here's what's going to happen.
That's our job.
What's going to happen? Yeah, well, episode one, season two, our names are going to be on the list. That's what's going to happen.
Oh,
see, now that you've griped about it, see.
Oh, that's cool. Well, it could be like Josh Jenkins or something like that. That would be cool.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that.
So if they're listening, I think that'd be great. I'd be honored to be a name get scratched off of Oliver's list. That would be pretty cool.
we'll have to think of a crime that we could do in Starling City that wouldn't be too outrageous. So
okay, well, you think about a white collar crime that we can commit, and you bring that back to the table next week for the show.
All right, I'll do it.
All right, well, that's about all we have for this week's episode of Green Justice.
We hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you did, please make sure you leave us feedback on iTunes. You can also contact us at by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.